Good afternoon, and thank you for joining this teleconference on high prescription drug costs in the U.S. and what Congress and the administration can do about it. I'm Shawn Bishop of the Commonwealth Fund, and I will be moderating this discussion. I'm joined by three experts who will provide their insights into federal policy developments related to prescription drug costs. Bill Corr, Senior Advisor at Waxman Strategies and former HHS Deputy Secretary. Charles Phelps, economist and member of the National Academy of Medicine's Committee on Ensuring Patient Access to Affordable Drug Therapies. The Honorable Henry Waxman, former chairman and ranking member of the U.S. House of Representatives Energy and Commerce Committee and sponsor of major laws related to prescription drug innovation and pricing in the U.S. Congress included three provisions in the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, and President Trump included somewhere in the order of 16 provisions in his fiscal year 2019 budget blueprint that address pharmaceutical costs. Most of us have a general sense of what these provisions are, but it would be helpful to have more detail on what they do or might do. Bill, let's begin with that. Could you explain the pharmaceutical provisions that Congress included in the Budget Act and that President Trump proposed in his budget? What are they, and how far do they go in lowering prices?
Thank you, Sean, and thanks to the Commonwealth Fund for hosting today's teleconference. We're experiencing historic increases in prescription drug prices and prescription drug spending. As we discussed in the Waxman Strategies report published with the Commonwealth Fund last summer, and as discussed in the National Academy's report last fall, these price and spending increases are the result of a multifaceted set of problems that are driving higher prescription drug prices. There are a wide range of policy actions that are needed to tackle these problems. President Trump has repeatedly advised the country that he intends to significantly reduce drug prices. Last Thursday, he said his new Secretary of Health and Human Services was, quote, really setting the world on fire with your lowering of prescription drug prices. So let's briefly consider the recent actions Congress and the administration are taking and what impact they will have. In early February, Congress passed the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, which included three provisions that address prescription drug costs. First, and likely the least understood, is a provision that changes how the Medicaid program reimburses for drugs that have undergone minor changes from the original version of the drug, sometimes referred to as new formulation drugs. The provision requires these drugs to pay higher rebates if their annual price increases are above inflation. It may sound small, but it saves $6.5 billion over 10 years. Second, Congress agreed to close the Medicare Part D coverage gap, or donut hole, a year earlier by increasing the manufacturer discount from 50 to 70%. The coverage gap discount program requires manufacturers of brand name drugs and biologics to provide a discount to beneficiaries in the donut hole. These discounts count toward a beneficiary's out-of-pocket costs, allowing affected beneficiaries to reach the threshold for catastrophic coverage as if they were still paying 100% of the cost of the drugs in question. This change saves Medicare money and protects millions of older Americans from high drug costs. Third, Congress also extended the same coverage gap discount program to include biosimilars, making these alternatives to biologics more affordable for patients. Shortly after the Bipartisan Budget Act was passed, the Trump administration released their 2019 budget blueprint. As Sean mentioned, this budget blueprint includes 16 policy proposals to address drug costs. And I would like to try to categorize those for you in three general buckets. First, there are two Medicaid proposals. The first would address brand name drugs being misclassified as generic drugs for Medicaid reimbursement. The result is the brand name drug pays a smaller rebate to Medicaid. The other is a five-state demonstration to allow states to negotiate drug prices. Today, states can form purchasing compacts with other states to gain greater leverage in their negotiations. However, federal law limits states' authority to exclude a drug from coverage in the program. Under this demonstration, the administration would allow state compacts to exclude drugs from their formularies to gain leverage in negotiations with manufacturers. This proposal could lower prescription drug prices for Medicaid, but it should be balanced with appropriate access to the treatments patients need. This proposal would be implemented through legislation, or it could also be piloted through the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovations Authority. Second, there is an FDA, second category is, there is an FDA proposal related to the 180-day market exclusivity period provided under the Hatch-Waxman Act. That act provides for a generic drug approval system that ensures safe, therapeutically equivalent generic drugs are available at lower prices when patents and other market exclusivities terminate. As an incentive for generic manufacturers who challenge invalid brand name drug patents, the law provides for the 180-day exclusivity period for the first generic approved before a second generic can be approved. The budget proposal would rescind the exclusivity granted to a generic drug manufacturer that has an application deficiency that is delaying the generic drug's entry to the market. It is unclear what this particular proposal is intended to address because a more effective policy would be to end the exclusivity of 180 days if the first generic manufacturer delays going on the market as a result of a settlement agreement with a brand name manufacturer, the so-called pay-for-delay settlements. The third category and the remaining proposals are all related to drug spending in Medicare, which occurs in both Parts B and D. Some of the proposals, such as setting an inflation limit on price increases for Part B drugs, could directly mitigate significant price increases if implemented in a way that penalizes the manufacturer for increasing the price. Many of the other proposals are designed to reduce patient cost sharing, such as eliminating cost sharing for generic drugs for dual eligible beneficiaries. The devil is in the details with most of these proposals, and we are continuing to wait on the documents that provide that information to conduct further analysis. In summary, some of the President's budget proposals would have the important impact of reducing Medicare patient costs for prescription drugs, and others could alleviate growth in government spending for drugs in Medicare and Medicaid. These are worthwhile actions to take, but we must also recognize that they have limited impact on drug prices, and the overall impact on federal spending is also limited. The President's budget proposal is scored to save about $5.7 billion over 10 years. The bottom line is that different, more effective policies that are targeted on the drivers of high drug prices are required to lower prescription drug prices and make prescription drugs more affordable. Hopefully, the provisions I've described in the Budget Act and in the 2019 budget and President Trump's predictions will encourage further conversations about those more effective policies. They include proposals like increasing competition in the pharmaceutical industry and distribution system, eliminating anti-competitive behaviors by the industry that block or delay competition, and testing new models for reimbursement that incentivize value and outcome. Sean, I think that's an initial general summary, and we can then go into more detail as our listeners would like.
Thank you, Bill. Chuck, I know you're on the line here. Could you also jump in and share your perspective on the pharmaceutical provisions in the President's budget? What, if anything, should policymakers consider beyond both the Budget Act and the President's budget, in your view, and why?
Thank you, Sean. I'll be speaking primarily to summarize the report from the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, Making Medicines Affordable, a National Imperative. I was a member of that committee along with 17 other experts from widely spread across the field of pharmaceutical policy and manufacturing. What we'll find is that the recommendations of the National Academy report specify a much wider set of activities to really control drug pricing than are presented in the Bipartisan Budget Act and the President's budget statement. There are some things that came out of those that were in the National Academy report, which I'll highlight briefly, but let me just summarize the areas where the National Academy report felt that important actions needed to be taken in a broad package to control this problem. The first is to accelerate market entry of generics and biosimilars to enhance competition. This includes specific recommendations to prevent the pay for delay that Bill Corr was just speaking about, and also to preclude with vigorous antitrust enforcement anti-competitive mergers. We would also seek to minimize evergreening, which is patent extensions that keep coming along to increase the market exclusivity period without really significantly altering the drug that's available to patients. It just extends the time of market exclusivity and high prices. The Academy also recommends seeking reciprocal drug approval arrangements with trusted nations around the world, so we could, in a sense, accept their agreement that a drug was safe and effective and allow it into the market before FDA approval had necessarily been granted here. The FDA's backlog on approving generic entrants is also important. They've done important work to reduce that backlog, but as more and more generics come onto the market, the backlog persists. The European backlog is two drugs. It counts in the hundreds in the United States, so we recommend funding in the FDA to eliminate and completely remove these backlogs on approving generic competitive entrants in the future. And so there's a whole raft of things relating to generic entry. None of those address the question about prices of drugs that are still in the exclusivity period from patents. And the Academy report recommended on this, primarily focusing on these drugs, that the government consolidate and apply its purchasing power and formulary design strengthening to directly negotiate with drug manufacturers for lower prices. In effect, Medicare, CMS would become the bargaining agent, and states would be, on our proposal, empowered to opt into this bargaining agreement if they wished, but it would greatly strengthen the bargaining power versus the current situation. As a bit of background, I will say we did not recommend direct price controls on the National Academy report. This is a less intrusive negotiation process, and compared to the pricing of other services in Medicare Part A for hospitals and Part B for physician services, this is actually less intrusive. Both Parts A and B, the government directly sets prices without negotiation, so this is in effect a more flexible process than the Medicare system does for entirely for the almost everything else in healthcare. The third set of recommendations that the Academy proposed is to assure transparency and financial flows all through the supply chain. There are several statements in the President's budget, for example, talking about discounts being passed on. Our report finds that you just can't get data to tell what's going on now on that question. When discounts are given, we don't know how big they are, or we don't know where they stick within the distribution chain. And so the Academy report recommends full transparency to allow understanding of exactly what happens to these discounts as they move through, where profits are sticking, and where they're being passed on to lower prices to consumers. A fourth recommendation area deals with the direct-to-consumer advertising of the industry. The American Medical Association has called for a ban of this practice, and the United States is only one of two nations in the world that allow direct-to-consumer advertising, the ubiquitous on television and other media. Our report recommends removing the tax deductibility of these expenses and seeking an industry code of conduct that would continue to promote public health benefits of these ads without capturing, you know, trying to avoid the adverse effects that they now have on costs and spending. Another fifth recommendation we made to put a cap on out-of-pocket spending in Part D. This is directly done in the president's budget, almost exactly the same as the Academy report suggests. Another area of concern for the Academy is the orphan drug program, which Congressman Waxman was essential in helping to bring to market. It's been very effective in getting drugs to market for diseases that have relatively small populations that might benefit. There are a number of loopholes that have emerged in the Orphan Drug Act where there have been situations where blockbuster drugs that have more than $1 billion a year in annual revenue have been eligible for and continue to receive receive orphan drug benefits. So we propose the limitations on how many times and when pharmaceutical companies can get the benefits of the Orphan Drug Act so that it continues to function in its very important fashion. There are several other recommendations that I won't dive into, but those are the ones that I believe are most important. Now let me close with a little bit of context in relation to this. That one of the things that's happened in the United States is there's been a very rapid and large growth in prescription drug insurance coverage over the last 3 or 4 decades. When the Orphan Drug Act and the Hatch-Waxman Act and the original Bayh-Dole Act to develop drugs more passed in the first half of the 1980s, 35% of prescription drug costs were covered by insurance. That number is now 87% according to CMS data, and in a sense, market pressure to control prices has evaporated. So the importance of doing something now on drugs is directly related to the growth in health insurance coverage for prescription drugs, and we believe, I certainly strongly believe, that trying to deal with this just by fixing the out-of-pocket cost is not going to solve the underlying problem of the cost at the front end of the system. The higher coverage of insurance simply erodes market forces and invites higher prices, and we're bearing the consequences of that now. I'll conclude my remarks with that and be open for questions when we get to that.
Thank you, Chuck. That's very helpful. And we can, one of the challenges that we have based on your comments and Bill's comments is that there's a lot of moving parts here. And I think, Bill, as you said, a lot of challenges related to the multidimensional nature of problems that need to be addressed. But I'd really like to turn to Congressman Waxman and get your perspective here. Because you, as you know, you were a major leader in setting up our current framework for prescription drug pricing in the U.S. What do you think of the president's package, and what are the opportunities for moving all or parts of it over the next 3 years? And really what we're trying to get to is, in your view, what will it take to get more action from Congress to lower drug prices, given that we have so many things that we need to address? How are we going to get this done?
Thank you very much, Sean, and the Commonwealth for hosting this conference on the high drug costs and prices, and particularly with a focus on what the president is proposing. Congress will respond to these proposals the way they always do. They'll take some of them, tweak some of them. It will be Congress's proposals in the final day. The proposals that have already passed in the Balanced Budget Act are important ones, and many of these proposals that are now being put forth in the president's suggestions for the budget are ideas that have been around for some time. Some of them were even proposed by President Obama with some tweaks on them. So I'm sure Congress will look at these proposals and decide what they want to adopt. But we're not short on ideas of how to tackle high prescription drug pricing. Bill and Charles discussed several promising proposals that could lower prescription drug prices and make sure patients have access to affordable, life-saving treatments. Many of the proposals in the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine report were also discussed in the report my team published this summer with the Commonwealth Fund. There are several good policy approaches, but it will be up to Congress and the Trump administration to decide what problems of high prescription drug pricing they're willing to take on. And this will not be easy. The politics will likely get in the way of the policy, but it can be done if members of Congress have the will. As you can tell, there's no silver bullet to address the issues of prescription drug pricing. In this Congress, that will start with figuring out what problems there can be bipartisan support to take action. When I think back to the time when Orrin Hatch and I worked to pass in the 1980s legislation to create incentives for R&D for new drugs, a generic drug market, and also incentives for manufacturers to invest treatments for orphan diseases, those efforts were successful because they were bipartisan and the proposals were well thought out before we took consideration of the various interests. It took us several years of conversations and debate, but we didn't give up and we were able to build the momentum to pass legislation that focused on striking a balance between competition and incentives. For a while, we found that balance. However, I think that the rising prices of drugs is a result of losing that balance, and there is an opportunity to restore that balance in the Congress today. Our design has run its course, and we are in a situation where fundamental changes are needed to rebalance the incentives and price competition that Senator Hatch and I worked hard to find in the 1980s. We saw a few small positive steps with the bipartisan budget deal that included closing the Medicare Part D donut hole a year early, extending the manufacturer discounts to biosimilars, and fixing the issues with Medicaid new formulation drugs that allowed excessive price increases. But keep focused on the fact that while the president's budget also included several proposals that could lower patient costs and reduce federal spending for prescription drugs, it had very few proposals that tackle drug pricing. That's not to say that his proposals aren't without merit and won't help a lot of people, but if you're talking about high drug prices, there's very little being proposed to deal with that problem. The complexity of the issues lend themselves to starting with an understanding and agreement of the various problems and what's driving these high prices. And that was the approach that we did when we developed our report. We thought there ought to be a consideration not of just a bunch of ideas and suggestions, because we certainly are not short on ideas on how to tackle high prescription drug pricing, but we need to find where there's a possible consensus on a bipartisan basis to deal with those drivers of costs where Democrats and Republicans can work together. And even in a divided Congress, progress can be made, but it has to start with a discussion among the policymakers with a few simple questions. What are the problems and drivers we're willing to take on? And what are we willing to do about these problems? The media plays an important role in contributing to that conversation by helping people understand these complex and complicated drivers of high drug pricing. And that's why I'm pleased that we have this opportunity to talk directly to the media. There are some immediate items that are ripe for addressing and could result in incremental fixes that would increase price competition. There are many members of Congress who agree there are problems, and I hope they continue discussing how to find solutions. But I do want to give a couple examples where I think Congress should be ready to act. Brand name manufacturers' tactics to delay generic competition using the risk evaluation and mitigation strategies and limited distribution networks. This is the CREATES Act, and Congress could move on that proposal. They could look it over and see what objections there are to it, but I don't see why there ought to be any objection to making sure that those who want to make a generic copy of a drug can't get the information to be able to make that copy of the drug. Congress could reaffirm FDA's authority to ensure access to samples that would be available when approving a REMS or approving a new drug application. Generic manufacturers should not have to go to court to get access to the brand drug. That was in the CREATES proposal, but there are other ways to address that issue. Brand name manufacturers should not be allowed to misuse citizens' petition to delay and approvals. In addition to the work FDA is currently doing, Congress could ensure there's no delay as a result of filing of citizens' petitions unless there's a safety issue or other unexpected concern. FDA can complete the biosimilar pathway, including finalizing rules around interchangeability of biologics and biosimilars to encourage more manufacturers to enter the market. And federal agencies could engage in proactive market monitoring. There's also an opportunity to increase FDA authority and resources to monitor the drug marketplace to identify and address anti-competitive behaviors and gaming by manufacturers. Some of these can be done by Congress, some can be done by FDA alone, some can be done together. But these solutions should not be the end of the work. There are several major areas that also need to be addressed. For example, the role of the federal government in purchasing drugs for the various federal health programs, including Medicare, VA, and DOD, or address the length of patent and exclusivities protections so that the incentives to develop new drugs are balanced with the need to increase price competition. That's the balance we need. That's the balance we try to achieve in the Hatch-Waxman Act. We need to look at those proposals after the experience of several decades and to realize that balance needs to be restored. So I'm pleased to be part of this discussion and to join in the answering questions that may come up.
Thank you, Congressman Waxman, for your comments and taking us through your experience. Bill and Chuck, before I open up the line or we ask the line to be open, do you want to add any additional comments or should we? I'm just seeing a no from Bill.
Yeah, I know. I think we're
you good?
Ready to move on.
Chuck, do you want to add anything before we open up the line?
Just briefly to emphasize my complete agreement with what Congressman Waxman just said about needing to rethink this balance. This is the key to the policy issues in this area. When the extension to 25 years of exclusivity was granted in legislation in the 1980s, that was a really good balance at that point. As I mentioned earlier, the wide, strong increase in insurance coverage for this has tipped the balance far away from where it needs to be now, in my personal judgment. So I strongly endorse what Congressman Waxman just said in his concluding remarks.
Thank you, Chuck. I think that now we're happy to take your questions, and if the operator can open up the line, we would appreciate that.
And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause a few moments to allow questions to queue. We'll take today's first question from Kathy Kelly with Information Week. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. It's actually Informa. Pharmaceutical manufacturers have been very critical of the provision in the budget law that increases the discount in the donut hole to 70% and have said they want that repealed. I just wondered what your prediction was about whether they would be successful in repealing it or perhaps revising it.
Who wants to take that? Anybody want to jump in on that, Congressman?
Well, I think they'll put that issue on the table because it's a concern to pharma. I think that the Congress is going to have to look at all the issues with regard to the Medicare donut hole and make sure that what we're trying to do is get people through that donut hole without having to pay an extraordinary amount of money. So obviously, if we lowered spending, that doesn't mean we're lowering the prices. And we ought to see what the Congress does when they look at all the issues with regard to the Medicare donut hole.
Thank you.
Anybody else add in? Bill? No. Chuck?
No.
The only thing I would just add to that obviously that was a saver. I think, Bill, you had mentioned how, you know, that was a saver provision in the Budget Act, and so rescinding that would require expenditures. So that's going to be a hurdle if they revisit this. Obviously, it would be at least taking away something that beneficiaries theoretically would have been given if the law were to be able to go forward. So that's another consideration. So I think there's a hurdle there for sure, because it was both, it's going to cost money to undo it, and two, it's, in a sense, it's taking something away from beneficiaries that they otherwise would get. So let's turn it back over to the operator to see if we have more questions.
And as a reminder, it is star and one to ask questions. We'll go next to Robert King with the Washington Examiner. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I wanted to focus on a point made about minimizing evergreening. Would it take an administrative action to do that, or does that have to be done through legislation in Congress?
Thank you. Briefly,
I think the answer is probably both. The evergreening question is extremely complex. It's one word that encompasses dozens of behaviors. So my guess is that some could be done with administrative action. Others may require legislation to clarify authority. I'll just leave my comments at that.
Bill, anyone jump in?
No, I think Chuck is exactly right. The Patent Office, works initially with the pharmaceutical companies as they submit additional applications, and we've got to be very cognizant in that process that novelty doesn't necessarily mean that a drug is different clinically. And so there's some complicated questions, but it's very important that we get to the bottom of evergreening, because the original compromise between patent extensions and generic drug approvals in the early 1980s assumed that you would have one patent life extended for some of the time that you were at FDA, and that has changed, and what evergreening has done has allowed companies to extend well beyond what was expected in terms of patent protection. And to the extent that the additional patents are not significant improvements in the product itself, and that in the way it would affect people clinically, we need to re-examine that. Also, part of the patent process that is under challenge from the pharmaceutical industry is the internal review that the Patent and Trademark Office provides when there are questions about additional patents that have been issued. And that issue is before the Supreme Court. I know that the Senate Judiciary Committee has been very interested in assuring that the Patent Office review, inter partes review as they call it, is continued and is successful. It's a much quicker way to determine whether patents are valid and assure that we get to the competition side of this equation in a timely fashion.
Let me just add, if I might, that a lot of the proposals we've been hearing about are proposals to bring about competition sooner, get the generic drugs reviewed and out on the market so that competition can lower the price. But the balance is also not to make sure that the patents and the exclusivities keep this monopoly in the hands of a drug manufacturer without competition. A lot of the ideas that people have should be looked at in terms of the balance. Get the competition going sooner, but make sure that the incentive to produce new breakthrough drugs is adequate, but not overextended beyond what anybody ever imagined through games that are played either to stop a generic competitor or to hold on to a patent when the time is up and competition will be needed.
Mm-hmm. Right,
one more quick comment from Chuck here. It's important we think about competition in the broad sense. There's now very solid evidence showing that sometimes only one or two generic entrants is insufficient to get the market price down to a good competitive level, and there's continued price decreases with third and fourth and sometimes fifth entrants in the same market. So it's important to have processes that assure we have multiple competitors in these markets in some occasions.
Right. Thanks, Chuck. Thank you all. And I would just add to that is that what I'm hearing is that there's action to be taken on both sides of the equation, so to speak. You know, can we encourage more participants in the market, and can we make sure that the innovators have a fair amount of time to market their products? So we have a lot to do on both sides, and what I'm hearing from Congressman Waxman is that we need to look at both sides. We have issues and problems on both sides that could rebalance the innovation with the competition. Let's go back to our operator to see if we have more questions.
Certainly, and as a reminder, it is star and one for questions. We'll go next to Linda Johnson with the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi. Given the power of the pharma lobby, does anybody think that Trump is actually going to make good on his pledges to reduce high drug prices? And I'm not talking about the competitive things and nibbling around the edges that you've been discussing. I'm talking about allowing reimportation or some kind of price control so that people here are not paying four times what things cost in Europe and elsewhere.
I think that that there's no appetite. This is Henry Waxman. No appetite to move to price controls. I think we need to look at the existing system where we want to give incentives for development of new drugs and then to have competition to lower prices. Chuck is right when he mentions that it's not just one generic, but often many generics that actually lower the price of drugs. I think that the president has given us an opportunity to look at this issue and to put it at a high priority. I remember when President George H.W. Bush, after many years of stalemate on the Clean Air Act, said he wanted a Clean Air Act and said that he was ready for Congress to act. I think we ought to look at President Trump's statements as an invitation for members of Congress to take on the issue where they can develop a bipartisan consensus to act. That may not mean, and most likely will not mean, anything on price controls or a silver bullet, as it some people think they might have it, but to look at the various drivers of costs and to figure out ways to deal with them, just as we know that we're ready to do what we can in the CREATES Act. There are other areas where I think we're ripe for action, and we need Congress to sit down and focus on the issue, not just who's for this and who's for that, but what can they do? There's no member of Congress, Democrat or Republican, that hasn't heard from constituents who are angry at the high price of drugs, which are making these drugs unaffordable. And we know from our own budget, we're paying more and more for drugs, and that's an increasing cost for federal health programs, and it's certainly a great burden on the private insurance system as well. There are ways to propose less of an impact on people, and many of the president's proposals do that, but I think we've got to start tackling the high price of drugs itself.
Which is what I asked about, and it doesn't sound like you see anybody actually going to do that. I mean, you said we need bipartisan agreement in Congress. How is that going to happen?
Well, I was in Congress for many, many years with Democratic and Republican presidents, Democratic and Republican control of the House and the Senate. And I think it's a mistake to think that Congress cannot act, even when you have different parties in control. We need to focus on what are the drivers of cost. There's no Democratic or Republican drivers. It's questions of what can we do, and we ought to look at some of the ideas, kick them around, see what Congress is willing to do, and then work beyond that as we can try to develop a consensus which will have bipartisan support. Hatch-Waxman Act was bipartisan in its nature. Of Senator Hatch as a conservative Republican, Henry Waxman as a liberal Democrat. The Orphan Drug Act was passed overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis. And even the Clean Air Act, which is probably something that couldn't pass if we're put on the House or Senate floor today, was overwhelmingly adopted on a bipartisan vote of the Congress. Democrats and Republicans standing up and putting their imprimatur on a law that I think has done a great deal of good. And I think Congress can do it again.
But yeah, I think one of the things that what I'm hearing is that, what we need to focus on, as you said, Congressman Waxman, is what are the problems to be solved? And that's the rallying cry. It's really about what are the drivers, what are the problems? I think that's what I'm hearing from the speakers today. And I think what sometimes we tend to do, because as was said here, we have a plethora of solutions, but it's not about rallying solutions. Congress will find the solution. This is if I'm understanding what you're saying, Congressman, they'll find a solution if they sit down and commit to understanding what the problem is. So that's sort of what this conference call is about, is hopefully the media will be able to help people understand what the problems are and commit to a rallying cry around the problems. And that brings Congress to the table, hopefully, to find a solution. Any more questions? I think we are at the end of our time. I know we could talk for at least another 3 hours, maybe just on one of the topics that you all brought up. So let me just say thank you, all of you, Congressman Waxman, Bill, and Chuck, for coming together today to have a very quick conversation, but we hope we'll have more of these. We really appreciate your participation on the phone, and if you have any follow-up questions, we're happy to speak with you offline, and we hope to hear from you again on another future conference call. Thank you.